You're not the only one with that question. So how do we do that? We give people field recorders, we give them the experience to ask questions and to edit that kind of audio, and all that comes from the support from people like you. So show your support, 877-500-5266. Maybe I'll put a special together about Boba, who knows? 877-500-5266. And I only know how to do that because of the skills that I learned by being on the Cable Evening News and being a volunteer here at Cable and being given all that skill because of the community support. Again, that's 877-500-5266. And coming up next is Labor Radio, which is a collective of Cable volunteers who are talking to you about labor. They say, hey, what are the questions that we have based on our lived experience around the labor movement here locally and nationally? So show your support, 877-500-5266 today.
Cable would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast provided by Cameo Cafe, located at 8111 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. Serving burgers, breakfast, and brunch from 6:30 to 3 every day. Lunch provided by Bridges Cafe and Catering, located at 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Bridges Cafe and Catering is a restaurant and catering company located in Northeast Portland on the corner of MLK Jr. and Northeast Knott Street. Their kitchen is about 75% organic, open daily. Dinner provided by Dove VV, located at 2727 Northeast Gleason Street in Portland. Open 4 to 10 p.m. daily and serving cornmeal crust pizza. For more information on how you can support KABU, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KABU's prize drawing rules. Everyone who donates will be entered into the drive prize drawings. No purchase necessary to be entered. Making a purchase or contribution will not improve an individual's chance for winning. The Fall Drive Prize Drawing is subject to all applicable federal, state, and local laws and regulations. Void where prohibited or restricted by law or regulations. To enter, call 877-500-5266 between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. and provide your name, complete address with zip code, date of birth, and day evening phone numbers with area code. Only one entry per person per household per year will be accepted during the drive drawing period. Entries may be mailed, with the aforementioned information, to KABU Radio, care of Membership Department, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, postmarked by September 22nd. Incomplete or late entries will not be accepted. Winner will be determined in a random drawing on Thursday, October 4th. Winner will be notified by telephone, mail, or email after Monday, October 8th. For a copy of official prize drawing rules and restrictions, and for the names of the winners, go to kboo.fm/ Fall 2018 drawing. And thank you.
The time is 6:02 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes, broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. We're both public school teachers and host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. Joining us today in the studio is Marge Hogan. Marge, welcome.
Hi, thanks.
And on the phone, I believe we have Adam Aguilar. Adam?
Yes.
Great.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, great to have you both. Well, we always like to find out a little bit about educators' backgrounds and experience and that kind of thing. So why don't you each tell us a little bit about your teaching background and experience?
Okay, I'll go ahead. So this is Marge. I'm a Spanish teacher at Union High School in the Evergreen District. I've been at Union High School since September of 2011. So that's I went there shortly after getting my teaching degree, although I had taught adults a little bit before then.
Great. And Adam?
Yes, I'm an English teacher in the Evergreen School District. I've taught in the district for 10 years.
Okay, and just for anyone who may be out there listening that doesn't know, Evergreen is a school district in Washington, not in Oregon, but close by. It serves parts of Vancouver and...
Right, a good way to think of it is kind of go to Vancouver and then everything to the right of Vancouver, or kind of to east of 205 is Evergreen.
East side of Vancouver, okay. Gotcha, thank you. So tell us a little bit more about what inspired you to become a teacher. How did that come about?
Well, for me, go ahead, Ann.
for myself, I come from a family of educators. Both my father and mother have been educators. My dad taught high school English for 37 years, and I was actually one of his freshman students when I entered high school, and that unto itself is a story. But, you know, my mom ended up changing her career halfway through to go into education. And my little brother actually is also an elementary teacher currently. And so I guess you could say being a teacher kind of runs in the family.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, for me, I was doing some research in graduate school. I got a graduate degree in linguistics, and I knew at the time that was something that wouldn't serve me for a whole lot besides research, but we were doing some great investigations of language in mathematics classrooms, actually in middle school math. And as I looked at what the teachers were doing in the kind of data that we were analyzing, I realized this is the kind of job where you will never be bored. You know, it's the job of teaching involves like theater and group facilitation and data analysis and project management and counseling, all wrapped up in one plus more. It's often overwhelming. It's never boring.
Great.
Great. And tell us also about your role in the union, and specifically in terms of the contract campaign, the negotiations that have been happening.
Yeah, so Adam and I played the role of strike coordinators. Mm-hmm. And Adam, do you want to speak a little bit to your role?
Yeah. Marge and I have been quite the team, being support bargaining leaders, having the responsibility of overseeing 17 zone leaders and 85 picket captains during this process. We have, you know, an 1,800 membership association, so it takes a significant amount of organizing and planning to put an infrastructure in place to make sure that all of our members are being heard and are organized together through that process.
Yeah, and one thing that was exciting about this, just in terms of organizing, is we're looking at a context where, because of legislation that was sent down from the state after the spring session, a lot of districts across Washington found themselves facing a strike. And it means that state-level resources, the WEA staff that would normally be sent down to help out with a strike, were spread very thin. So at locals like ours, we had to begin that process just with rank-and-file folks and folks that Adam and I both serve on the executive board and have been involved with the union, but we're not paid staffers. And our position as strike coordinators would, quote-unquote, normally, let's say in a normal strike situation, would be filled with folks who are professional organizers. So what it meant was that beginning early in negotiations, when we began to see that there was a need to organize, to have bargaining support moving into the summer, we began to recruit volunteers from among membership, from among rank and file, to fill those positions that would normally be filled by, again, folks from the WEA staff. What it's meant for us, too, is that we can develop leadership at the building level. Not only our picket captains, the people who have been doing the work of, you know, up to last week, we're doing the work of organizing pickets at their buildings, but also our zone leads have taken on an enormous amount of responsibility. And some of those responsibilities are things that would normally be taken on by people outside our local, again, state folks. So I'm really looking forward to working with that leadership and continuing to organize. For us, it's been a really interesting experience, although certainly, you know, difficult to take on those responsibilities and figure out how to do them.
Did you feel a little bit like you were sort of winging it, or did you feel like even though you didn't have WEA staff there, that you could call on them with questions, or how did you go about Who did you turn to when you had questions?
Yeah, there was certainly a lot of WEA advice, you know, even if they weren't filling those roles. And they, as other strikes closed or as people reached tentative agreements throughout the state, we were able to get more support. But in building that whole organization that Adam referred to, you know, all those volunteers, it was us on the front lines and our face asking people to do those tasks. And it makes a big difference if you're being asked by your brothers and sisters in your local to step up and take a responsibility rather than somebody from outside of your district. That's something mm-hmm. that I think helped us a lot to help people to understand that this is something that we were doing together. Certainly in terms of the how to coordinate a strike, we got lots of help from WEA, but actually doing the work on the ground, a lot of it, that was us.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So I have a bit of a follow-up, and it kind of combines a question that we already talked about before we came in the studio, which is sort of a context for the strikes in Washington. And you mentioned that you knew fairly early on that you were going to need to organize and that you were going to have to do that over the summer, which is extremely impressive, the amount of buildup that happened over the summer. So can you give us a context, or our listeners, for the strikes in Washington and how it's related to legislation around class size caps and funding and teacher salary, earmarked money for teacher salaries?
And actually, Marge, I'm going to ask you to hold on to that thought for just a minute, because we are in the middle of a membership drive here at KBOO. And so I want to turn it over to Ken, who's going to talk a little bit about that.
Hey, thanks, Stephen and Rachel and Marge. Yes, it is our fall membership drive, and we're into the, actually been going for a few days. We started on Thursday, and we're going to go to the 20th, I think, of September. And the reason we have these, we have just a few of them a year, is because the station is about 80% funded by you, the listener. And we've been doing that since 1968. It's just amazing. We're in our 50th year now. The number to call if you're not currently a member, and it's a great time to become one, is 877-500-5266. Or you can go online at kboo.fm. Why do it? Well, you're listening right now. You're listening to public affairs programs like Labor Radio. This is a special fall membership drive, 1 hour edition of Labor Radio with our live in studio guest. And normally we have Prison Pipeline from 6:30 to 7. We'll still have Hard Knock Radio tonight, which is a syndicated program out of the Bay Area. But of course, KBOO is mostly local programming. It is truly community radio. It's the rug, the station that ties the community together. And we do that through public affairs. You heard our news, Amy Goodman at 4 o'clock with Democracy Now!, our volunteer-produced newscast, which is every weekday at 5 o'clock. And then all of the shows tonight, we have a different nature, a music show, which is very eclectic. Some of it is very soothing, and some of it is quite annoying, but I say that about almost everything on KBOO. There's got to be something that you love, and then a few things that you probably wouldn't listen to, you know, if I held your feet to the fire there. But that's truly the diversity of the station. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. And if you call and become a member now, you'll be entered to win a prize. Again, that number, 877-500-5266. This prize is a chance to win a $200 gift certificate to Next Adventure. Or you can go to the kboo.fm website for rules and details. You could also give at the website. There's a big donate button. Again, the number, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm. And there's so much I could say. We have another six-minute pledge break coming up. A little past the hour here, and we'll get to that. I want to talk about all the different trainings we do here, all the different programming we have here, and that's all supported by members of like you. Our I asked about what our yearly operating expenses are, and it's about $800,000. And like I said, about 80% of that comes from people like you. So we're not run by the Koch brothers. We're not run by Sheldon Adelson. We're not run by, the Russians, by Mr. Putin and his super PACs. This is all listener-supported community radio run for people like you, by people like you. Give us a call now, 877-500-5266, or online at kbo.fm. And now back to Labor Radio.
Hey, thanks for that awesome pitch. So I'm just going to try to restate this quickly. Can you give us a context for the strikes in Washington and how it's particular to legislation around class size and funding?
Yes. So Washington State is actually the number one state economy in the nation. And despite having a very rich economy, they have struggled over the years to fully fund public education. And Washington State actually has a unique state constitution where it is the state's, quote, paramount duty to amply fund public education. And that was the crux of the McCleary lawsuit that was brought before the Washington Supreme Court. And in 2012, the court agreed with the plaintiffs that the state was failing to amply fund public education. Unfortunately, rather than the full enforcement of that decision in 2012, around that time, the state Senate ended up forming a conservative majority when two Democrats switched party lines and basically created obstruction in the Washington legislature for several years, to the point where in 2016, the Washington Supreme Court actually ruled that the legislature was in contempt of the McCleary decision and was fining them $100,000 a day. And so it was only until the recent legislation and then the subsequent special session when the state Senate flipped back over to Democratic control that the appropriate funding was able to meet the court's deadline in 2018. Which is what the court's deadline was. So basically what we ended up having was, one, the elimination of the salary allocation model, which is what governed compensation for teachers for the entire state of Washington. And so the legislature actually eliminated that. And then they provided the additional $1 billion for this year and then $1 billion for next year to go specifically for teacher salary. So what this did is it created this Pandora's box where suddenly every local school district in Washington State had to negotiate not only their own salary model, but the $1 billion that was coming down from Olympia, the state capitol, to fund that salary model. And as a result, we had many of our local unions just assuming, well, you know, now that the money's here, we will just bargain for it at the table and it'll pass through to our own salary model and we'll be good. But what was not anticipated is that there would be this collusion of superintendents all across Washington State that actually tried to keep this money that was constitutionally mandated by the Washington Supreme Court to go to our educators. And that is what started the conflict throughout Washington State, where we have ended up in multiple strikes, with Southwest Washington being the epicenter of that conflict between superintendents and local unions.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for that, that history. And so because you knew early on that there would be organizing towards strikes or work actions, was there organization between locals in the buildup to the strike? And
yes.
Yeah.
What was amazing throughout this process is how every local school district found themselves in the same position. So all of our educator unions, whether that was Evergreen, Vancouver, Hawkinson, Battleground, Camas, Ridgefield, we all banded together in a coordinated bargaining effort to protect each other, because we knew the superintendents at this point were colluding with each other, and we had to band together. It truly was this historic moment to see our educators be willing to take strike votes all over Clark County, and they did. And of the 7 strike votes that were taken in Clark County, 6 ended up going on strike for multiple days. And, you know, just to see the unity that came through the Clark County community, as our community rallied behind our teachers and educators. It was so powerful and overwhelming. I mean, we had families pulling up in their cars with their kids to bring our teachers on the picket lines, food, water, supplies, everything you could imagine, and businesses and the labor community coming out in support of our strike. It was amazing. It was just so cool to see, and humbling as educators to know that our community does respect us, our community does appreciate us, even if our own school district didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say a little bit more about how you talked about the different locals banding together? Can you talk about any specific examples or a little more in depth about what that looked like?
Well, our local is part of a Uniserve council, so while Vancouver isn't in the neighboring district, our local meets regularly with the council of other locals, and together we had some coordination around kind of standards and bargaining and how we wanted to move forward, and especially around our bargaining support operation, kind of how we were going to organize to support the bargaining team in the lead up to our strike vote.
And I'm curious also about how was it just obvious, or was there some kind of reveal that the superintendents and districts were colluding to kind of divert that money other places? Or did it just sort of come out in your bargaining sessions?
Well, from...
go
ahead.
Oh, just to give a couple of examples, what we began to notice was how similar board policies were being passed to threaten and intimidate our teachers and educators in Clark County. We would see it happen in one local school district, and then suddenly the behavior would happen in another school district at a school board meeting. Another example were the requests for mediators to slow down the bargaining process and to drag out the strike. So, for example, in Evergreen, when they requested the mediator, it added 2 days to our strike because there were a couple of days where the mediator had to go to Centralia to deal with another dispute, and they were not available to bargain with us on that day. And so we saw that happening all throughout Clark County. We saw it happening throughout the state of Washington, and it became very clear early on that the same tactics that were being done by one superintendent were being repeated by another.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, we are going to take another quick membership drive break and turn it back over to Ken one more time.
Oh, thanks, Stephen, and thanks, Rachel. I'm Ken Jones, and I'm here in the air room, actually, with Mike Fotakis, who is my partner pitching to you this evening, and he's also working the boards. It's our full membership drive. We're a few days into it. We're doing pretty well, but we really depend on this. As I mentioned before, 80% of our operating budget comes from you, the listener. It doesn't come from big corporations. It doesn't come from big, huge government grants. And it certainly doesn't come from private parties who are just wealthy and decide to give money to media, and then the media pretty much repeats the stories that these guys want to hear.
But it also doesn't come from people just listening. You have to pick up the phone. You have to dial 877-500-5266 right now, or you have to go to kboo.fm. Labor Radio is a weekly program here on KBOO, but it's syndicated throughout the country. So when you support Labor Radio, you're not just supporting this vital information getting to the Portland community, you're also supporting all the Pacifica networks across the country who syndicate this show, getting this critical information. What we'd like to ask you to do right now, when you call 877-500-5266, or when you go to kboo.fm, sign up for a recurring monthly gift to KBOO in the amount of 1 hour's worth of your wages. Give 1 hour a month of your wages to KBOO. That's the labor way. That's the way that labor, that's appropriate for Labor Radio. Every week when you listen to KBOO, when you listen to Labor Radio and Prison Pipeline, who normally share this hour, you can think that this is the hour that you are paying for on KBOO. This is the hour that you're helping keep on the air. This is the critical news and information that you're getting, not just to this community, but also to every other station that syndicates this, that doesn't have the resources that KBOO does to produce programs like Labor Radio. So right now, dial 877-500-5266. You can also go online at kboo.fm and click on the donate button.
And those monthly wages, that hourly wage to give monthly to KBOO, Mike, that could be as low as, I don't know, $10 an hour, $12 an
hour,
$15 an hour.
Right, well, in principle, it could be down to $7.25
an hour, yeah, right? It can in principle. Or if you're better off, if you got a good job and you're doing pretty well, we could be talking about $40, $50 a month. And we actually have some gifts for you. If you give us a call at 877-500-5266, you can talk to our operators about thank you gifts. But the most important thing is you're supporting community radio. You're supporting public affairs shows like Labor Radio, like Prison Pipeline. We've got Transpositive PDX, Disability Awareness, The Food Show, Pacific Underground, Black Book Talk. It's just an incredible diversity. There's no other station in the U.S. and perhaps the world that has this diversity of programming, and you're only going to find it on KBOO, which is only here because of you. We've been doing this for 50 years now, since 1968, so now's a perfect time to call if you haven't become a member yet, or if it's time to renew your membership. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. And Mike, there's also a drawing too, if
people
call up and become members tonight.
We have a raffle. All you have to do is call now, become a member now, and be entered to win a prize. Call 877-500-5266 for your chance to win a $200 gift certificate to Next Adventure, or go to kboo.fm for rules and details on all of the prizes. And you know, Ken, we don't just get talent that comes to us ready to produce radio. When you support KBOO, you're not just supporting that diversity of programming. Your call to 877-500-5266 doesn't just support those critical but marginalized voices that the mainstream media overlooks. We also train all of the volunteers and programmers here at KBOO to produce professional sounding radio, and we give them the platform to have their voices heard. And that's normally a conversation that they are excluded from. And when you support KBOO by calling 877-500-5266, we're not just talking about how we support those communities and amplify those voices. We are amplifying those voices. So be a part of that right now. Go to kboo.fm or dial 877-500-5266 right now. Our volunteers are standing by.
Which is perfect, because we, as I mentioned, we have this diversity of voices, all sorts of groups in the community. But if you feel that you are a voice that is not currently being heard, you can come down to KBOO, and for free, we will train you on how to do radio, audio production, digital editing, and you could start with a podcast, you can get a show on the air. This is the way a community radio station should work, but we need your support to do that. Give us a call now, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm.
All right, so here's what I'm wondering. You guys didn't just get together one day and say, okay, all in favor of a strike, aye, all opposed,
right,
nay. There was some organizing, some building momentum among members to get to that point. Talk about how you went about that.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, the context that Adam just referred to with the McCleary decision kind of did a lot of the organizing for us. Teachers were ready to make a change. And it's important to realize that voters in Washington are often voting pro-education. So when you see, like, for example, prior to the Great Recession, voters agreed to give teachers a cost of living adjustment. After the recession, during 6 years, we had to go without that. We were asked to tighten our belts, and we never really gained back that what we had lost to inflation. Voters approved Initiative 1351, which is our class size initiative, to put caps on class sizes. And the legislature decided to modify that to not implement it in K through 12. So I think the public, as well as teachers themselves, were very frustrated that their pro-education kind of agenda was not being implemented by the legislature. But I will say that the union did a lot of work at the state level and at the local level to educate members in understanding that bill that came out of the spring session. Even the superintendent of public instruction, Chris Rakedahl, admitted that, you know, this is really messy legislation, and it's going to be hard to implement. And so we had to do a lot of work to figure out what exactly that meant and to help educate members on what the language of the legislation meant. We began sitting down to try to bargain. Our bargaining team was sitting down to bargain prior to the end of the school year, and it became clear that they were not interested in bargaining or even necessarily opening the contract. We were talking about bargaining for us. Our contract still had a year left. Mm. So we were on a 3-year contract, and the last year of the contract, we were just opening up that little slice of the contract that has to do with salaries. Because the legislation that came down, like Adam mentioned, removed the salary allocation model, so our contract was pointing to an entity that no longer had any value in the law.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned educating members, how did you go about educating them? You didn't, right? You're not teaching classes to your members. So how do you get them educated?
Yeah, well, at the building level, a lot of times we do that through 10-minute building meetings, invite all members of the building to come up, and we work to put the information that was coming out of out of Olympia and kind of with the support in interpreting that we have from the WEA at the state level, to put that into chunks of information that people could understand where they could go to get more information. Most of that education at the building level happens in those just little union meetings that you have with your union brothers and sisters in the building where you work.
Great. You mentioned earlier that Washington, you said that the people are pro-education in Washington. Tell us about some of the support that you got from parents and even maybe from students during this strike.
Yeah, I think you can go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I mean, we had parents and students actually joining us on the picket line, whole families. And as I mentioned previously, you know, getting out of their cars to provide food, supplies, water, treats, anything that they could possibly do and give, they did it. We had members who would come to their picket lines every morning, and there would be colored chalk messages of love and support that families had written either that night or early in the morning before our members got there to the picket lines. And they were just